105 FM, WBAI New York, and on the internet at WBAI.org. The program you just heard, Labrish with Haptah Selassie, will be back next week at 2 a.m. following the work of the Midnight Ravers. It is 5 o'clock in New York City and time for Back of the Book. Stay tuned.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
It should be about 5 a.m., and you're listening to All. Thank you for voting no. Radio WBAR New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Well, good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
Indeed. And we're going to talk about various things here, and you can find out a little bit more about what we're talking about by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. When you get up there, you will see a blue navigation frame on the left-hand side of your screen. At the top of that, it will say latest Back of the Book program links. Click on that, and you will get to the web page for tonight's program. We do a new web page for every program. And the WBAI website and the archives seem to be functioning. This is our 51st pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded, and it's pre-recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. So if things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we can't be referencing them. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program. This is what we have to do in these dangerous times. In the top news story of the world of the week, we are holding at 110 followers on Twitter. Ah, it's so tremendous. The world quakes when it looks at that huge number. The next public WBAI local station board meeting is scheduled to be held on Wednesday, August 11th, 2021 at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. The WBAI LSB met this past Wednesday night. It was a usual meeting, although some people were just getting giddy over the referendum defeat, and some others were bringing up stuff for their own personal political aggrandizement. And according to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 189,333,625 on Friday, and global deaths reached 4,071,118. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 34,046,437, and the death toll in America was 608,766. So, 1,993 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program 1 week ago. This means that the death rate in America has gone up a little bit this past week. When we were off for 2 weeks, it was averaging more than 300 a week lower than that. There are surges in areas where vaccination rates are low, What a big surprise. A lot of Americans are vaccinated now, but in the South, the vaccination rate continues to lag. More than 99% of COVID-19 deaths are now among those who have not been vaccinated. So-called breakthrough infections, where people get infected even though they're fully vaccinated, they account for about 0.1% of the hospitalizations and a tiny percentage, much less than 0.1%, of the people dying of COVID-19. By the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we quoted above will, of course, be higher. And again, this was all mostly preventable. India continues to catch up to the United States of America with 31,026,829 cases and with deaths at 412,531. I hope that those figures for India are real and not politically adjusted. The figures for both the United States of America and India are probably higher than the official tally. And I don't know, we'll see. I mean, India has had a sudden drop. Is it real? Is it from people being vaccinated? Or is it politicians quashing information? And speaking of officials quashing information, Dr. Michelle Fiscus was the medical director for vaccine preventable diseases and immunization programs at the Tennessee Department of Health. She was, until she was fired this past week. She was fired for telling people what the law was in Tennessee. She's been trying to get teenagers vaccinated, and she put out a memo that said, hey, folks, by Tennessee law, if an adolescent, if a teenager is considered mature enough, they can go get themselves a vaccination even if their parents don't want them to. So she was saying kids can get vaccinated if they're 14 and over and if they're mature enough, and if their parents don't like it, well, they can still get it. It's their lives. And so she put that out there. It's the law in Tennessee. And she got fired. She issued a statement that said, quote, I have been terminated for doing my job because some of our politicians have bought into the anti-vaccine misinformation campaign rather than taking the time to speak to the medical experts. They believe what they choose to believe rather than what is factual and evidence-based. And it is the people of Tennessee who will suffer the consequences of the actions of the very people they put into power, unquote. And, of course, these are the Republicans down there doing this. And, you know, this really goes beyond ordinary politics. There are political dirty tricks and is playing politics. That happens all the time. It's not good. It's not nice. It happens. But there are certain limits. This crosses a line. They're now flagrantly endangering kids' lives and health for politics, for their stinking politics. And this is terrible stuff. And this is what's going on in the South. And there's a piece in the Science Times about local circumstances dictating when to wear masks and who's most at risk in what situation. And I'm quoting here from an article in the Tuesday, July 13th, 2021, Science Times. The article's by Tara Parker Pope. And in it, she says, several states in the South, including Mississippi, Tennessee, Alabama, and Arkansas, have vaccinated fewer than 50% of adults. And then she speaks to Dr. Paul Offit, a University of Pennsylvania professor and a member of the Food and Drug Administration's Vaccine Advisory Panel. Yeah, he probably is in the thick of this, all right. And she says he cites a study in the Netherlands of the measles vaccine, which, like the COVID vaccine, offers high levels of protection, that found an unvaccinated person was safer in a highly vaccinated community than a vaccinated person in an area with low vaccination rates. And Dr. Offit says, quote, if you're in a highly vaccinated community, you have a sort of a moat around you, unquote. And so, yeah, she's talking about when and where to wear masks and stuff like that. And generally, yeah, if you're in an area where everybody else is vaccinated, yeah, you don't necessarily need to have your mask on or anything. And if you're in an area where a lot of people are not vaccinated, if you're vaccinated, probably a good idea to wear one because there's a good chance it's going back and forth. And in the same article, it talks about a documented case of the spread of COVID-19. And this is in Australia. And security cameras documented a brief encounter of two people passing each other in a shopping mall. One of them was unknowingly infected. The shoppers were facing each other at one point and breathed each other's air for only seconds, which led to the second person getting infected. So it can really just be like that. You pass by somebody and you got it. The germ has gotten into you. And if you're vaccinated, of course, you can't stop the germ from getting to you. It's in the air and it floats in and it hits you. It's like getting hit by a baseball in Yankee Stadium. If you're sitting out there and you're by the foul pole and a foul ball comes in, it's going to knock you right in the head. Now, if you're wearing a baseball helmet at that point in time, which mostly kids do, you might be okay. If you're not wearing a baseball helmet, that ball's liable to really knock you silly. And it'll probably bounce off and somebody else will grab the ball and run away with it. And you won't even have the baseball as a souvenir with that big knot on your head. So that's what this is like. There's no way to prevent the virus from getting to your body. It floats in, it gets in your mouth, it goes up your nose, it can even go in your eyes, and it's in you. And it starts trying to do its stuff. At that point, your immune system needs to react and dismantle it and destroy it. And if not, it gets into cells and it starts doing all the bad stuff. And so this is something you can't prevent. What you can do is make sure that once it does get in you, your immune system's all ready and it gets destroyed and you're safe. So this is a very interesting thing that it is the herd immunity concept and not the herd immunity referred to by certain Brooklyn rabbis who somehow, I don't know, maybe, you know, maybe Moshiach has done this for them. Or maybe certainly me, Yahweh came down and gave him a bill of health and said, don't worry, if you listen to the rabbi, you're all going to be immune from herd immunity. The rabbis who, you know, have master's degrees in davening but don't even have a grammar school child's understanding of science have been telling people in Brooklyn this for the entire pandemic. But the basic deal is that if you are vaccinated, you still have to watch out because, one, you don't know how your body's reacting to it. Although if you had a good reaction, I mean a serious, uncomfortable, unpleasant reaction to both of the shots that you got or the one shot you got, if you got a Johnson & Johnson shot, well, you're probably really well protected. However, some people, their immune systems just don't work all that well. And so the vaccine isn't going to be that protective in them. And so far, medical science can't predict who that's going to be, except in some cases. There are people with very compromised immune systems, and it's known that they have a problem. And so you can still get it if you're vaccinated and you're around a whole lot of people and there's this big miasma of stuff. On the other hand, there's a good chance you're not going to get it, even if you're surrounded by that. But as that Dr. Offit said, somebody who's unvaccinated, surrounded by people who are vaccinated, is safer than somebody who's vaccinated and surrounded by the unvaccinated people who are just passing this virus back and forth. That's our weekly discussion of COVID-19 and the politics around it. Oh, man, some of this stuff is just horrible. And at the top of the program, we referenced thanking you for voting no. And that's a reference to the bylaws referendum. Yes, the infamous attempt by a small group of people to hijack the Pacifica Foundation. It's over. And as we said last time, that might have been our last program a week ago. However, the bad guys lost. And we didn't know what was happening a week ago, but this past Monday, they told us about it. And the referendum was basically to change the Pacifica bylaws and basically not just change them, completely replace them with something else this small group of people had written. And what a coincidence, the bylaws they had named them specifically by name as individuals, as the people in charge. You would have had four people plugged in as the Ayatollahs of Pacifica. And, oh, it was a terrible idea. And they would be able to, like, sell WBAI if the four of them agreed on it. And they could have other people on there, but they would pick who it would be. And then you could have elections, and you would have, like, I think it was something like one listener and one staff member. One staff member chosen from all of the staff in Pacifica. As it turns out, there are 1,035 staff in Pacifica, we now know from this thing. And among all of them, one person would be chosen. So that would be very interesting. And so we have this situation where they were really trying to just take it over. The plan was obviously to sell WBAI to solve the financial problems that exist throughout all of Pacifica. And there was a lot of disinformation being put out by these people. They called themselves New Day Pacifica. Yeah, New Day Pacifica. What a mess. And anyway, so the results are out. And I hope you all voted no. The hijackers were defeated. Those of us on the no side won, but just barely. It was a very close thing. And it was the staff that saved Pacifica. The official statement from the National Election Supervisor, Renee A. Penaloza, was, quote, "The referendum did not pass as it failed to garner majority vote yes for staff and listener voters. As a result, the current bylaws stay in place," unquote. And so that's what happened. That's the end of it, but not quite. They're going to be back. See, in order for the referendum to pass, both staff and listener elections have to meet quorum. And the current bylaws create two classes of members in Pacifica. One are those of you who are listeners who have sent $25 or more to Pacifica and have become a listener member of Pacifica. And the other class of members are the producers who produce the radio programs you listen to. And so each side had to meet quorum, and that happened. And a majority, greater than 50% of both staff and listeners, had to vote yes in order to pass this referendum. And on the listener side, unfortunately, it turned out that the yes votes, the listeners voted yes by 56% and no by 44%, with 130 people abstaining somehow. And so on the listener side, it passed. And on a staff side, however, 41.4% voted yes, but 58.6% voted no. And that's what saved it. The staff saved it. And I know on one of the mailing lists, there's a guy going on about how oh, you know, the staff shouldn't be able to trump all of the listeners. Well, that sounds realistic in the first place, but you got to look at it and analyze it a little bit. There are basically what happened. Okay, and one of the things he's pointing out is the no's prevailed among staff by 75 votes. That's right. Only 75 votes prevented Pacifica from being taken over at this time. I've heard rumors that the New Day Pacifica people actually tried to take over anyway, but they got stopped. Oh, boy. So you know that by now we'd be off the air. BAI would be off the air. You'd be getting some stuff trunked in from KPFA, I suppose, which is what they did in October 2019 when a totally unauthorized rogue interim executive director barged in and took over BAI. He got shoved out after a month, and they ran their stuff here. And that's what you would be hearing right now if they had won and if they hadn't been stopped from trying to take over anyway. In any case, so 75 staff, 75 more staff voted no than voted yes. Whereas on the other side, you have something like 1,400 listeners voting yes as opposed to no. Now, if you want to look at this, you can say, oh, gee whiz, you know, 75 votes trumped 1,400 votes. Well, that is the way the bylaws are written, and it is necessary to respect the staff. Otherwise, this thing would go under. The whole Pacifica thing would go under fast, which is exactly, by the way, what these New Day Pacifica people want. And so what happens is, there's another way to look at this. If this had been just listeners, you would have had no more than 15% of the listener members voting to throw out the bylaws and put in four people in charge. These dictators would have been installed by only 15% of the listener members. So right there, that says something. Did you really want that? And it argues to this idea of, oh, no, the staff shouldn't be able to stop it. Well, we can and we did. And they're going to go to court over this, I'm told, and we will fight it. And it looks like we will win it because the bylaws say it this way. And this is the way it's been done for the past 17-plus years. So this was kind of... This is really something bad because last time we defeated them in all ways by two-thirds. Around 66, 67% of listeners and staff voted against them last time. This time they got the listeners to vote for them in a majority. And geez, this is terrible stuff. So the hijacker wannabes have already threatened to file a lawsuit to get the staff vote annulled. As I said, that's not going to work. And we'll see how that goes, though, because once you're in a court of law, there's no telling what might happen, but it looks like it can't work. So Pacifica is saved. But having come this close, I am sure that they will try again next year. And when they do, I hope you will vote. On the 26th of July, we'll be getting the totals of what radio station members voted how, and we'll see what the turnout is for WBAI. I'm really hoping that all of you who listen and who are members, in fact, voted against this bylaw referendum, and I hope you'll vote against the next one, too, because there's going to be another one. So there we are. We've got this bizarre situation where people have thought that they should just be the owners of Pacifica, treat it as their personal property, and do as they please with it. An interesting side note, during all of this, another bunch of people from California filed a lawsuit trying to put Pacifica into receivership, and they named a lawyer who is a friend of theirs out in California, and he would be... Justin, you know, he would be totally in charge. If you're in receivership, some person has it all and they get to decide it. That's the end of it, pretty much. And they had their guy and they went to court. Ironically, one of the people they were complaining about was their own main person who was going to be one quarter of the Pacifica National Board if they had won. So even among themselves, they can't trust each other. And of course, the judge threw out their attempt to put Pacifica into receivership. You can't just walk in and say, we want to be in charge here. It doesn't work that way. And if they had done that and the judge had been stupid enough to go with them, there would have been a countersuit, temporary restraining orders, and it would have become permanent and, you know, all of that. But yeah, these people are toxic and they're out to destroy Pacifica because they want to own it. And, you know, another part of the deal here, another part of this whole thing is that if WBAI were to be sold or any other station be sold, you know, it's a lot of money. It would be tens of millions of dollars for the license and all that. And this would be sold, and that's a lot of money, and it's complicated, and stuff goes back and forth. And the way we've put it in the past is some of that large amount of money, some of it's got to fall off the table, and there are people who really calculate how to get in there and pick the crumbs up off the floor. So there is also that aspect of people wanting to line their own pockets. And that was a part of this too, I think. Yes, you had to be a member of WBAI in order to vote in this or any of the other stations, but you're listening to BAI here. And so basically, it's the members who decide, and I'm hoping that when we do see the figures, it'll turn out that WBAI members came out in great force and voted no on this thing. But if you're not a member yet, you should become one. And how do you do that? You call 1-212-209-2950 and you tell the person who picks up the phone at the call center that you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of back of the book. A BAI buddy is the name we have for our sustaining membership, where you donate once a month to WBAI. And how you do that is you call up the call center, tell them you want to become a BAI buddy for BA in the name of back of the book, and they'll ask you lots of information, well, not a lot, enough information for your name and all that stuff, and your card number, and you tell them either your credit card or your debit card number, and you tell them how much you would like to donate each month. It could be $5 a month, $10 a month, $15 a month, $20 a month. You could do more, but I think that's the range for most of our listeners. And you can tell them, yeah, I want to donate that much every month. And you tell them what day of the month you want to be billed. Yeah, and they will charge your credit card or debit card on that day. And that way it's convenient, because for some people, there are these high and low points during the month when it's not good to get billed for something. So you get the control over that stuff. Again, 212-209-2950. And you can call up and tell them that's what you want to do. And when you're a member, you get to vote. Now, we currently have an election going on. The referendum thing is over, so that's done for this year. And the election for delegates to the local station board, that's ongoing, but the date of record for that was June 30th, which we told the listeners about. Well, there's still next year when we're going to have this referendum, another referendum. These same people are going to try and hijack Pacifica again. And if you become a member now by calling 1-212-209-2950 and becoming a member, say, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of back of the book, and you sign up for that, you'll be a member by the time they bring the hijacking thing in again, and you'll be able to help stop it. And we're going to have delegate elections again next year for the LSB. See, we get 1 year off, then we get 2 years in a row of elections. That's the way it works. And anyway, so this is what we have going on here. And you can participate in all this. Plus, you, most importantly right here, you will be contributing to keeping WBAI on the air. WBAI currently costs, the general manager says, about $120,000 a month to run. So we need to get some dough. We don't have commercials on here, so we have to get on the air and beg you for money. That's the big thing. And yeah, lots of people have said, we got to find a better way of making money. And people have been saying that for many, many, many years. In fact, people have been saying that for decades. The fact is, the way that's most reliable for us to fund this insane radio station is by asking you, the listeners, to fund it. We ask you to call in a pledge to 1-212-209-2950 and say, yeah, I want to become a BAI buddy. Thank you, and I hope you'll all do that. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. And you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. We're sitting here in our fabulous studio. Well, okay, it's an old typing table from, I think, the 50s. And we have a couple of mics and a teeny-weeny little recorder on it. And that's our studio. And so we're in here in our living room recording this. And we can't have a fan on. We don't have an air conditioner, but we have fans. And we can't have the fan on because that makes a lot of noise. And, oh, boy, it's going to be hard to listen to that because it's going to be... Not to say that it isn't hard to listen to me when I'm talking about it. Anyway, it's even harder because the noise level comes way up with the fan. And so we're sweating like crazy here. How are you holding up under this, my dear?
Oh, I feel like I'm in hell right now, actually, with the temperatures in the 90s in here. Yes, there's dead air. Yes, the other kind of dead air. Bright lamp burning down on us so we can see what we're doing. So yeah, my veins are bulging and I just feel
I'm sweaty all over the place. I take the heat a lot better than Pickles does,
and this is not the worst heat wave ever, or even heat ever, here on the East Coast right now.
On the other hand, the thing is, we have to stay here doing this, and we can't have the fans going, so the air isn't even moving around us, and we don't have the time right now to air out the room and then come back. We don't have the time for that, so we're busy here trying to record this fast. Oh boy. So yeah, the heat is here, and heat domes are showing up on the West Coast, and heat domes are killing people with record high temperatures in the North American West. It's not the American West, not the United States of America West. It's the North American West. A bunch of places on the west, in the west of Canada, have hit their highest temperatures ever recorded in those places. And, that's not good. So we've got all of the tremendous heat hitting them, and it's not like it hit them once. It isn't like, oh, every 100 years you get a big heat dome hitting. No. What is this, their third or fourth?
I believe the fourth in 5 weeks is happening now over the weekend.
Yeah, in a short period of time. So they're getting hit with this, and there are 115-degree temperatures in various parts of the West out there, and things are melting. Some of the mountains out there, you show like 2 weeks apart the photographs of some of the mountains, and it isn't the usual amount of summertime ice loss. It's a lot more than that, and it's not the full summertime.
The fruit is being cooked on the trees, hanging from the trees. That is being cooked and rendered inedible.
And we also should note that on the West Coast, a lot of the marine life, especially things like mussels and clams, those kinds of creatures that can't move around, like once a mussel attaches, it stays there for life, and then it filter feeds. And they're being cooked also. Mass die-offs, which of course means you're going to have all this necrotic tissue there, which means bacteria are going to come in, which means bacteria are then possibly going to bloom, and you're going to have some toxic water, which is going to kill more marine life. It's a very bad situation.
Yep, and soy and wheat crops are basically just dying because it's too hot, and they cannot be harvested because they're just drying up.
Oh. Yeah. And so we have this. There are droughts going on all over the West, along with the heat domes, which come in and then go. The drought has come in and stayed. And they had, 10 or 12 years of drought out there. And then I think they had a year of heavy rains that washed a lot of stuff away. And then the drought started again. And the drought has been lasting. And it's... that's also making big problems because a lot of our food comes out of like the Central Valley in California. That's where they make their money. They grow crops, all sorts of things, and they sell that, and that's part of the commerce in America.
And a lot of the West Coast and the West is on fire.
And then there's that little item. Because of the tremendous heat and the drought, the ordinary plants that are sitting around, the trees and the grasses and all of that, they're dying off or just drying out completely, so that instead of being like green grass and all of that, the grass is all sort of that beige color, which means it's straw. And when you get all that heat and a drought, the straw is really, really dry, so... a lightning strike or some idiot throwing a firecracker or a cigarette among the grasses, bang, the fire starts, it goes right away. That's killing people out there. And it's certainly wiping out a lot of small towns and things and people living in places. I mean, we've all seen the pictures on TV of people driving vehicles through this hellish thing of where they're driving down the road and it's nothing but fire coming in every direction. And, you know, who could imagine a thing like that? It really looks hellish. And that's happening out there. And it's been happening for a while and it's happening right now. And the wildfire season used to happen between like, what was it, May and September, something like that. That's when wildfire season was out there. They've always had wildfires, but, you know, some, not as many as now. But now the wildfire season itself is 12 months long. The fire crews don't get any time off. They're on this all the time. I wonder at this point, do the right-wing jerks in the West finally get it? That climate change is real and is happening? I mean, how do they deny that it's happening? I mean, I know they've laughed about it a lot. Now that their houses are burning down, now that they can't eat, now that the ones that are farmers can't raise crops, are they finally getting it? And of course, Europe has floods. Europe is getting these big floods. Currently, in Germany, there are 120 dead and hundreds of people missing because of these massive floods that have come in to Germany and the rest of Europe. So the water that could be used to help out the west of North America is showing up over Europe, basically, and drenching them and flooding them. And these are big floods. You see this just like a big cut down the middle of a town, and I don't know, this looks like it's at least 10, maybe 15 feet deep, this cut that was the road. came down the road and tore up the road and then started eroding what was under the road. And it's just this great big gouge in the landscape. And, of course, people's houses are swept away. In one place, you can see where the bridge has collapsed because the water was so furiously going under it that it took out one of the supports for the bridge. And, yeah, this is pretty bad. It's the Ahr Valley in Germany where it's apparently the worst is happening. It just started raining and didn't stop, and gigantic floods. And it's only July. We're just in the middle of July here, and in some places, it's August when it really rains. What's going to happen in August?
I think that the years 2020 and 2021 will be seen as a benchmark in global warming, because you have the pandemic, and then you have severe weather just escalating so much that it's at the forefront on every continent. So sometimes I wish we had something to call these things, because it's easier to sometimes deal with something if you can call it something like the Great Depression or the Great Recession or, you know,
World War II.
World War II, yeah.
Maybe somebody will come up with it, but certainly looking at it in 2020, 2021, we have actual science fiction scenarios showing up. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I've certainly read plenty of science fiction things, you know, these dystopian things, these apocalyptic things happening in science fiction stories. And they'll frequently have two things happening at once. There will be a global war, and we start slaughtering each other, and most of humanity dies, and there's radiation. And then also we suddenly discover there are creatures that we never saw before that have always been around, but now they're really angry and they kill people. So you got to watch out for these invisible monsters. In the story I'm thinking of right now, they can jump down into your lungs and destroy your lungs and kill you.
Oh, boy.
And so those are the kinds of things. We don't quite have that yet. And another one, I think a comet passes, and this really doesn't happen, and the comet leaves a lot of ash and dust in back of it, and that gets into all the machinery, and all the machinery in the world gets gummed up and stopped because the it's unlubricated, and as the engine turns, it just grinds up all of this ash, and it's all the machines stop. And on top of which, I think there's a plague, and I don't know, everybody over the age of 20 dies or something. So you've got, you know, teenagers and younger people trying to cope with a world where the machines are gone. This is something, too. We've got a pandemic that shows up and, as a pandemic must, goes around the world and does all this chaos, kills millions and millions of people. And on top of that, there is what in mathematics, if you look at a graph, it's called an elbow or a knee. The sudden point where the graph goes from maybe steadily going up to suddenly going up much more sharply, you know, the way an elbow or a knee would bend. And I think you're probably right. There's probably an elbow or a knee on the climate change graph right in these 2 years. And we're seeing it. We've been talking about this on back of the book. We've been talking about this from the early 80s, well, from the mid 80s when we did this program first. And, you know, we were talking about how the ocean absorbs a lot of the carbon dioxide and we were getting away with that. Well, the more carbon dioxide the ocean accepts, the less it can accept more. Plus, when you warm the water of the ocean, it can't dissolve as much carbon dioxide. So you've got this interesting feedback loop going on there, and the world is warming up even more. And then you've got a nation state or two that have gone from being guys pulling bamboo carts to guys driving 18-wheelers and Mercedes-Benzes, and billions of people doing this. And that adds to what Americans have been doing for years and Europeans have been doing for years of making factories, producing stuff that throws a lot of carbon dioxide in the air and also some methane getting in there. And then you've got things like thermokarst. Thermokarst is what you call permafrost when it's melting. Permafrost is basically frozen earth. And usually what permafrost is, it's not just dirt alone. It's all the organic material that's in the dirt. And usually what happens is these places have frozen over. These are the places where you find mammoths well-preserved. In fact, supposedly, one bunch of guys up in Siberia once found a mammoth so well-preserved that they ate it. And it didn't kill them or anything. It was just meat, very frozen meat. They thawed it out, cooked it, ate it. That was a meal. In any case, when you have the permafrost going and you get thermokarst, what happens is you have the dirt there, you've got water, and the water is now melting, and everything warms up, and you have all of these basically dead plants, and you also have the microbes. And there are microbes that make their living off eating dead plants. So there's a lot of dead plants, and the microbes wake up, they start to eat. Now, in the last program, we talked about bacteria that are living in a stratum on the bottom of the Pacific Gyre that is 100 million years old. And they may be 100 million year old bacteria. We don't know, but they're really, really old. And they were trapped down there for a long, long time. Well, the bacteria and other creatures and fungi and everything else, the microbes that are in the permafrost, those things are trapped in there for less time than those other things, and they're going to wake up too, and they're going to start eating, and it's going to be a lot of food, huge amount of food. Well, what does that do? Well, one of the main things that does is they eat, and their waste product is, in most cases, methane. Methane is worse than carbon dioxide for greenhouse gases. And so you get this going in there, and you look at the north of the world. The south, not so much, because it's mostly a lot of water in Antarctica, and there's not a whole lot of permafrost in Antarctica. Everything's totally frozen. But in the north of the world, the upper parts of Canada, upper Russia, Alaska, Norway, those Scandinavian countries that get up in there, and like Iceland and Greenland and all of that, they've got permafrost and they're getting thermokarst. And so this is also contributing to it. All of these things are contributing to it. Now, the permafrost was permafrost for thousands upon thousands of years. And now suddenly the thermokarst is happening and those microbes are eating and they're producing greenhouse gases and they're adding to everything too. So this is how you get everything to add together all of a sudden to make a gigantic tragedy. And people are looking and saying, one prediction from the European study is we're going to have to reduce CO2 emissions by, I think it's 7% over the next 10 years to prevent a gigantic disaster at the end of that 10 years. And that's not to reverse global warming. That's to prevent a much bigger disaster than we've seen yet. And that can happen. We could have a very, very horrifying mess happening with all of the global warming that's going on. And we're in it. And you and I can't get out of it. And there is that. We can lobby and talk about it and hope. And we have to hope something can be done about that. Previous people in the White House, of course, were among those right-wing idiots who said, ha ha, that's not happening. Oh, well.
And it's not like they can take a rocket to Mars.
Speaking of escaping by taking a rocket ship to Mars, which, by the way, wouldn't be a great place to live either. And speaking of taking a rocket ship, this guy Branson, this millionaire, he launched his silly rocket plane this past week. And, oh, man, you know, these billionaires, they get stuff in their heads and they think they're the hottest bleep in the planet. And, oh, yeah, I'm really hot stuff. Although they don't say stuff. And so they get their egos going, and they've got so many people to whom they pay money that nobody crosses them. So they just keep going and going and inflating their egos like crazy. Well, so Branson is talking about, oh, I got in this thing and we went up. We are astronauts. Well, I don't think you're astronauts. First of all, I don't think he got into outer space. He took a rocket plane to high up in the atmosphere. He certainly did that. High up in the atmosphere. High up in the atmosphere isn't outer space. And he did not at any point cross the Kármán line. The Kármán line is the generally accepted definition of the boundary between space and the Earth's atmosphere. And that's at 100 kilometers, 100 kilometers above the ground. That's, 62 and a fraction miles. Branson went up like 50-something miles, so he didn't do it. He's saying he got up to 80 kilometers. 80 is not 100, but he's saying, oh, but people allow you to become an astronaut if you reach 80. And the United States has said people has defined 80 kilometers as it. And I think at some point they might have, but, you know, that's when we were struggling and Yuri Gagarin had been going around the world and saying, hey there, capitalists, look what we can do. And America was saying, oh, we got to do something. So they shot Shepard up very fast and he came right back down, didn't make any orbits. And they said, okay, we have a man in space. Well, because they had to. So yeah, under those circumstances, they're going to say, however far up we go, that's space. Okay. So you want to define it by the Cold War scare stuff. Maybe 80 kilometers, if he even went that high. I mean, we're relying on him. And instead, it's not the Kármán line. The Kármán line is 100 kilometers. That's officially outer space.
And decades ago, dogs and chimpanzees and bugs got there before he did. So
that's true. That's true. He was just another chimp.
Oh.
But anyway, yeah, so Jesus, this is just nutty rich guy stuff where they just get their egos running and it's completely insane. Oh, well,
and
here
it's,
you are.
And it's not going to, it doesn't do anything to further science. Oh, the whole thing was, oh, you know, rocket travel's old fashioned. Oh, excuse me, that's what gets you to another planet, you know.
What did he take to get to 80 kilometers if he got that far? It was a rocket plane. You know, they say these things. And also he lied.
Yeah.
They showed him on his bicycle, riding a bicycle up, and then he gets on the stage and says, I rode my bicycle here, and now I'm going to take the rocket plane into outer space. And it turns out he didn't. It's a lie. They pre-filmed him riding a bicycle. And then they played that, and then he was already there. And he was standing on the stage saying, oh, I just bicycled. He was lying. He's lying about a number of things here, so.
I mean, rich people, you know, they need to find something to amuse themselves. And also, the fact that they dissed their commentator for this whole thing, this dog and pony show, dissed all the research and work and effort that came before. You know, just by, shut up already.
By real astronauts, by people who are, you know, really making a difference and figuring out how to get into space. Rocket scientists, actual rocket scientists working on things for decades. And there are people in the International Space Station. And, you know, people went to the moon. You know, I don't think he's going to be able, even in his own mind, I don't know if he's going to be able to compare himself to that.
I mean, all those women and men who did all that work for all those decades unto today. You know, how dare you, you rich jerk?
Yeah. And Bezos is going to – I don't know what Bezos' plan is. I don't know if he's going to go to the Karman line or not, or what the hell's going on. I'm not really paying a lot of attention to this. But it's galling to see people suddenly – you know, these dilettantes showing up and saying, oh, we're astronauts. Oh, what training did he do? You know, you look at the Apollo astronauts and the cosmonauts. All those people went through tons and tons of training, including the women whom they prevented from ever getting there. And the women were in large part more qualified than the men were.
Yes, they were.
And they never allowed them to go up there through sexism. All those people trained and trained and made it so that they could go up there and there would be a good margin of safety. And we've seen tragedies, of course, happen. And we've seen Apollo 13, where their training helped them to come back alive. What training did this bozo do? How to take two different pieces of film and put them together to make it look as if you rode a bicycle up there? No training whatsoever.
And I think sometimes people say, oh, well, we should be putting effort into human space exploration. But we human beings are explorers. This is why we left, you know, Pinnacle Point. This is why we walked around the world and then got in boats and went around the world, because there's something in the human makeup that wants to see what's out there. People left perfectly good places to live, you know, thousands and thousands of years ago, to see what's out there. So I think human space exploration is just part of who we are, at real exploration, I mean. And I hope it keeps on going, along with all the other stuff, all the robotic stuff, all the amazing stuff. I mean, that's part of our being human, and I hope we keep doing it.
Okay, final fast pitch. This is WBAI New York, and we are listener-sponsored non-commercial radio, and we need to get some dough here. Listener-sponsored is not just a slogan. It's what we really are. It's a legal statement. We are sponsored by you, the listeners. That's right. You, the listeners, are our sponsors. Without you, we do go away permanently. So if you could become a listener sponsor of WBAI, that would help us to survive. You become a listener sponsor by calling 1-212-209-2950 and saying, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. A BAI buddy is, of course, the name that we have for our sustaining membership. And what you do is, and Back of the Book is the name of this radio program. And what you do is, when the person picks up at the call center, when you call 1-212-209-2950, you say, hey, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And then you go through your details with them and you tell them how much you want to donate on a monthly basis. It can be $5 a month, $10 a month, $20 a month, $15 a month, whatever you want in there. $5 to $20 is what most of you can do. 1-212-209-2950. That will help to keep us all going. That's been it for Back of the Book for this week. We'll be back here next week. Coming up next is...
Well, we think it's Ralph Nader.
And at 7 o'clock, it's Jim Freund with his program Hour of the Wolf, all about science fiction stuff. For this next week, look out the window, watch the skies, and say, oh boy, I hope it doesn't get much hotter. And above all, remember what that sweating onto his copy dormouse said.
The WBAI Community Advisory Board will meet this Sunday, July 18th, 2021, at 1 p.m. The meeting will be held on Zoom by computer or telephone. Access information is available on the CAB page at wbai.org or on kpftx.org. Everyone is welcome to attend the meeting. The Community Advisory Board reviews the programming schedule, budgets, and assists with long-term plans for the station. And it's made up of listeners to WBAI who donate their time. Meetings are open to the public, and the public is invited to attend. Once again, access information available on the CAB page at WBAI.org or KPFTX.org.